essa bola vai rolar. Mundo é um tapete verde. Quando a bola chega lá, coração fica na rede, na rede, na rede. Olá, olá!
No Lego here, it's the Day Trippers. Tonight we head enthusiastically into the first of our World Cup themed podcasts, which will fill the void till pre-season training commences in July. On the show we'll discuss the runners and riders in the greatest show on earth, which this year returns to the home of football, a place where men aren't afraid to talk about erectile dysfunction, Brazil. How will Liverpool FC influence not just England but the World Cup in general, with so many of our players taking part in the tournament? We call our likely semi-finalists, we flag the players to watch for from some of the lesser known countries like Argentina and Germany, and we discuss our first transfer as a dyed-in-the-wool red completes the longest and unlikeliest of journeys towards finally making his debut at Anfield. We also look at our likely second signing and what else we can expect now that the players taking part in the summer spectacular have left Melwood. Right, first off, it's an actual LFC done deal, and no one saw this one coming in a bucket of bank holiday Mondays. It was always likely to be a Southampton player, but Ricky Lambert was definitely not seen by anyone. Given he's a massive red and previously released by the club, this is some fairy tale, isn't it, Carl?
Yes, pretty amazing story for Lambert, all right. As you say, nobody saw this one coming at all. It's something that's come out of absolutely nowhere and is done as quickly as we've probably seen a deal done over the last few years as well.
Hmm. Absolutely, and for the man himself, I think there's been such a genuine reaction from fans towards him. There seems to be such a positive response to his just kind of raw emotion and delight at the transfer.
Yeah, I think that seems to have gone up another notch today once it's been confirmed. I mean, once the rumour started, obviously it was the usual split on Twitter, on social media, about whether he's good enough, whether it's too much money and all the rest of it. But I think everybody seeing his face and his reactions and his comments today, I think everyone's just delighted they've got another player who's really going to fight for the team.
And just an initial response to you, just a one or a two liner, are you generally happy with it as a first signing of the summer?
Yeah, I am. I don't see any downside with it at all, to be honest.
I mean,
we know he's not going to be a world beater like Suarez is, but yeah, he's a good addition.
Absolutely, absolutely. James, your own initial response to the signing of Ricky Lambert?
Well, my initial response was I'd kind of been asleep for a short while in the evening, such are the weird hours I keep, and then I woke up to see that it was very quickly, it came completely out of nowhere, you know, unfolded in a matter of hours, didn't it? And it sounded like immediately it was almost a done deal, and I was delighted. Because I've certainly for as long as I've actually kind of ever watched him in the Premier League, I've rated him really highly.
Right.
I'm already a little bit sick of kind of like reading about people saying, oh, you know, he's not just a target man and, you know, he's actually quite good with his feet. Because I kind of think, if anything, I think, and Carl would possibly have the numbers to sort of corroborate this. I think if you watch Lambert and then you actually look at his output, I think it's the other way round. It's more the case that he's a very cultured and very sort of, you know, a very cultured striker who's got a high creative output as well as a goal scoring output, who also happens to be 6'2" and probably decent in the air and good with his back to goal. Because his actual, if you look at his scoring record last season, I think he got 13 goals in 30 odd appearances. I mean, some of those appearances were playing off the striker. He can play there when Osvaldo was in the team. But I think the thing with him is that it's as much about what he creates, because I think where Lambert will come in useful for us, I mean, I've long been of the opinion, the third choice striker for us has got to be someone who provides something a bit different. A lot of people wanted Remy, but to me, Remy would have been kind of an upgrade on Barini, positionally flexible, but kind of quite one-dimensional, just scores goals. And, you know, that's fair enough. But I think in the case of Lambert, you know, you're paying £4 million and 30 grand a week. We don't lose anything if he doesn't turn out to kind of like quite be able to make the step up. But, you know, it won't be for the want of trying, because it's his dream come true. And that itself could be a good thing for the squad, because you're not going to get someone like, if we've gone and got Bonny, who I quite rated, he might have not been too happy about not starting, you know, 30, 40 games a season. And then the other thing as well, I was going to say with Lambert, is basically that I felt we needed something different. And what Lambert will actually provide is just the space he will create for people. And if you look at his output for kind of key passes and that kind of thing and chance creation, that it's outstanding. Now, he's normally going to have one of Suarez and Sturridge playing up there. So that's either the first, you know, probably the best striker in the league, and, you know, maybe even the third best striker in the league alongside him. Then Sterling, who gets quite a few goals now. Then Henderson, who's got the potential to add that to his game. Potentially, if we bring in Lallana from Southampton as well, there's another player that's got a decent goal record. So I think it makes a lot of sense in that he does offer something different, but not so much as a pure kind of battering ram, as a kind of a player that just creates very, very well in the final third.
Absolutely. Neil, yourself, just to get your own immediate feedback to it, is it a transfer that you're happy with? And what do you see that this guy's going to add to the team?
Well, I suppose just to carry on from what Kyle was saying, what James is saying, the first thing that springs to mind with me is versatility. He seems to be Rodgers' first port of call in any transfer. He seems to want versatility with all his signings. I suppose the most refreshing thing about it in relation to transfers and the way football has gone, it's... There was no mention, from Ricky Lambert's side, there was no mention of money or transfer fee or wages or anything like that. He just wanted to sign for Liverpool. Yeah, there was no uncertainty whatsoever involved. And at the rate that the transfer happened is testament to that. And it's very refreshing to see someone that genuinely wants to play for Liverpool. And the finances were second, which is... I'd say is nearly as... It's probably a once-off now. It's very rare anyway.
Absolutely. Yeah. Phil, your own initial response, and maybe you could lead us into talking about the player himself, the fact that he's not a traditional target man, despite the fact that that's the impression that's out there among some people, and that he is a man of some considerable quality for the price we're getting.
Yeah, look, £4 million, a guy who's scored 28 goals in his last two seasons in the Premiership, who's going to come and knows himself arriving that the men in front of him are Sturridge and Suarez. He's not going to expect to demand the first team place as he comes in the door. But what he's going to give is I keep thinking to the Bellamy transfer when Kenny was in, and the passion and the desire and the will to just to do well for wearing the red jersey.
Yeah.
Like it's above nearly everything. Like, you could see the embroidered joy the chap had in his interview. You can see it in the pictures. He's bursting. Like, he's just bursting. Even the one where Sky Sports caught him at the airport and he couldn't talk about it, right? And you could just see, like, he was rubbing the face. He was rubbing... He wanted to tell the world how much this... Yeah. How brilliant this was. And as a story, I was saying to my missus, who absolutely despises football and couldn't care less, right? And I was explaining to her, like, this fella, you know, was released when he was 17 by Liverpool. You know, he spent 15 years more or less trying to get back to the top level, managed to get there with Southampton, and has now come back to the club that he supported as a boy and still supports as such. It's still a massive red. I said, all that's missing now is the penalty to win the Champions League final in extra time next year in Berlin, because in reality, this is the type of fairy tale film, you know, plot that you'd have. It's been down in the dumps and then suddenly working your way back right to the top. It's got everything that you'd need to actually make a great film out of it. The player himself, James has covered most of it. Look, he's not a traditional target man. He looks like a traditional target man, but there's more to him than just that. And the one credit to him is every time he's gone up a league or stepped up to a different team or a better team that he'd seen, he's progressed as a player. Even as he matured in years, he's progressed as a player himself. And he does score goals. And anyone, like, we're going to have 48 odd games next season between Champions League and between the league itself and various cup matches, and we're going to need fellas who can come in for league matches, who you know, can cover when, and we know Sturridge is a bit you know, tender when it comes to injuries and picks them up and will miss 10-12 games over the course of next season, and we need somebody that we can rely on that can come in and score goals and also give us something else when things aren't necessarily going our way in the pitch. Again, like if a Chelsea or something comes and parks the bus and we're basically have a 7-man attack going against Chelsea, what he can do is he can hold the ball. When that ball goes in there, it doesn't keep bouncing back. Or if we put a ball into the box, he has the aerial ability to get on the end of it, but that isn't his prime focus. He can create things, he can make other things happen for the likes of Suarez and Sturridge buzzing around him. And he fits into the squad. And I said this 2 weeks ago and I said it again last week. We have to not be afraid of signing players because we need a squad next season. We need need 18, 19 capable first team players, and players who will be able to interchange and come in and go out and come in and go out, and not be bogged down in the idea that we have a first 11 and that's our first 11, and then the lads on the bench, yeah, they can come in and do a job whenever. But you know, it's not, it can't be an 11. It has to be at least 16, 17 for the amount of trophies that we're going to go for. And also, to retain our challenging status or even to challenge again to win the league, we will need at least 19, 20 players, because you're going to have injuries, you're going to have other things to happen over the course of the season. And Ricky Lambert for £4 million at 32 is a fantastic signing in my book.
Yeah, Carl, maybe to finish this out so that we just get a more rounded picture of what we're getting here for our money and into the squad. You're talking about a guy who was with Blackpool, Macclesfield, Stockport, Rochdale, Bristol, up as far as I think 2009 before he moved to Southampton, but his figures since then have been pretty impressive. I mean, this is going to be our third striker, our third choice striker, but with Daniel Sturridge and his likelihood to be injured, he's going to get a game or two. What kind of stats can you provide for us based on what he's done so far?
Well, I mean, the thing with Lambert is that positionally he's quite similar to Daniel Sturridge in a way, in that he does play through the middle and he leads the line and all that, but he'll drop off, he'll drop into the channels, he'll come deep into midfield to pick up the ball. Sturridge does that an awful lot for Liverpool, and that gets overlooked a little bit at times. Where he's different to Sturridge is that Sturridge will then, he'll just move it forward a few yards, or he'll try a dribble and a shot from a long range or whatever it is. Lambert will wait for another player to move in from the flanks or from the second line of attack to take that space that he's left.
Yeah.
And that's where his creativity comes into play an awful lot. He's a little bit in the way of like a mix of Suarez and Sturridge, obviously not to the levels that those two reached last season, but he's a bit of the two of them. I mean, you look at his chances last season, he created 52 or 54 chances, I think it was, last season, which is somewhere in the middle of Raheem Sterling, Jordan Henderson, if you want to compare it to the Liverpool players. I mean, you add in a third choice forward with better players around him, with better movement. You know, he had the likes of Dani Osvaldo, who didn't really settle last year. Jay Rodriguez went through a 4 or 5 month spell of being very good, but either side of that, obviously, had his injury and he wasn't quite up on top of his game. He's got better players around him now at Liverpool. So even if he's not going to be playing every single game, he's still going to be creating an awful lot of chances. He's going to have better people around him to play off his through balls, which are very, very good. We talk about him as being a bit of a target man as well, but not just that. Well, Ricky Lambert, in terms of the aerial duels that he won last season, was pretty much exactly the same as Luis Suarez. Whether you want to say that that's a little bit to do with the balls that were coming towards him, or the fact that he was up against defenders who were specifically targeting him because they thought he was very good in the air as well. Obviously, that's a matter of context.
Yeah.
But he is someone who's going to offer Liverpool the chance to do both of those things. And the other thing is that you say he did play off the front man a couple of times last season, especially when they had, or when they were trying to integrate Osvaldo into the side last season at the beginning. Lambert can play through the middle, obviously in a one or a two for Liverpool. We could see Suarez and Sturridge flanking him, or he can partner either one of those two. And the idea, really, for a third forward, you would hope anyway, is that to not have Daniel Sturridge injured as much as he was, because we'll be able to take him out, we'll be able to rest him for the last 20 minutes of matches when he's sometimes picked up injuries, we'll be able to leave him out for cup games where he's previously played League Cup, Premier League, and hopefully that extra time to recuperate for Sturridge is going to leave him fit for the big games, for the Champions League and everything else. And we won't have to rely on the third striker as such coming into the team because he has to, but rather because we can change them.
Yeah, it's a very, very good point, actually. I suppose moving from someone who's going to be hopefully flexible and in fitting with what Brendan seems to want from players these days, to someone who's a little bit more of a specialist and has been linked very, very heavily with the club, to the point that an awful lot of people are reckoning it's almost a certain type of deal. And that's Mr. Moreno. Neil, have you any information for us on this guy?
Well, what I can say about him is, well, for me, before Liverpool make any defensive signings, the prerequisite for every defender is that you can defend. And he seems to be a very good defender. Of course, we don't see as much in the Spanish league as we do in the English league. But however, having said that, he's excellent in possession, he's a great first touch, and he's excellent going forward, and he seems to be a very good defender too. So he seems to have all the ingredients. At 21, and for, I suppose, it's around 20 million, I think, is a transfer fee, as Euros has been talked about. For personally, if you're spending 20 million euros on a defender, I think you should be buying the finished article and not buying potential so much. Now, at 21, he is by no way the finished article, so you're going to have to allow him a betting in period at Liverpool if he does sign, and you're probably going to, and if he doesn't have a good game, I suppose what the feedback might be, he needs 6 months to settle in, whereas I don't think we can allow, we haven't the time for anybody to allow them to settle in. So not knowing as much as I'd like to know about him, he seems to certainly have all the ingredients. Been playing at a top club, and Real Madrid seem to be interested as well. So, and Liverpool, so I suppose that speaks volumes in itself.
Yeah.
Having said that, I prefer us to sign somebody who was better known, not necessarily better known for the sake of it, but somebody who's won championships elsewhere, has been part of a winning team, and knows what it needs in the final stages of the season to get it across the line. Which, from my opinion, fullbacks Glenn Johnson let us down massively towards the end of last season. He's a winner. He has 50 caps, and he didn't do the business. So I think we should be bringing in players who are the finished article, particularly for that amount of money. Having said that, Mourinho has all the attributes to be a top fullback.
Fair point, Carl.
Just on that point, I mean, you talk about the finished article, which is fair enough. Everybody wants people who can come in and contribute to the team now. And we do definitely need to improve the team right now from the first game. You're right there. But who? You know, there are not a lot of good attacking left backs around other than who are already at, say, Real Madrid or Barcelona or whoever. I mean...
And he was close to travelling with Spain, wasn't he? I mean,
exactly. Yeah. I mean, he played just the other night against Bolivia, I think it was. And he had a good game. And if not for Azpilicueta having played right and left side this season, I'm pretty sure he would have gone. But now, because he's covering both sides of defence, it's allowed them not to have to take a full four fullbacks. But with regards to left backs elsewhere, I mean, you know, or not just left backs, but fullbacks on both sides, we've got one who's supposed to be the complete package already. He's experienced with the international caps, with the name and with the big price tag. And as you say, Glenn Johnson was a load of rubbish last season. You know,
yeah.
We can go out and we can buy a name who's won a Premier League title, or in a different league, you know, and they've been around for another 5 years on top of what Moreno's got already. It's not going to make them any better necessarily. There are not that many very, very good ones around. And if you look at the prices that you're being quoted for the likes of Luke Shaw, who obviously is even younger than Moreno, I don't think it's a bad investment at all. And having seen him, you know, quite a lot for Sevilla, obviously, this season, I don't really have any doubts about him being worth it over the next 2 or 3 years.
I suppose, Carl, my only take on this, and it's rare that this happens, is that you've got the likes of Ashley Cole, who's available on a free transfer, and I think some people will sort of gravitate towards the idea that, you know, where we gain on a transfer fee, you'd happily pay over the wages for someone like Ashley Cole. Now, again, we're back to an issue similar to Sturridge, that if you do go for Ashley Cole, his fitness record hasn't been great over the last 4 or 5 years in terms of missing games. And then you're back to a position where I suppose you're playing John Flanagan out of position. I've had a look at Moreno as well in that way. I think, Neil, for me, I think Moreno is more finished in the attacking form of the fullback as opposed to defensive form. And that's the one bit that he'll have to work on when he comes in. And a lot of people are saying potentially it's the way that Seville had set up in terms of how attacking and how high up the pitch he wanted him to play. But that's not unlike what we're talking about, the way Brendan wants his fullbacks to play. And there's a part of me that's thinking that if we bring in Moreno to play on the left-hand side and he's going to play as a very attacking fullback, that we're potentially looking at maybe a more defensive right-back, so that effectively if you have somebody like Wisdom or Flanagan coming in, they won't bomb on as much down the right-hand side of the pitch and could potentially fill in that gap alongside Gerrard or something, you know, that space when in true transition, because they're not going to be as high up the actual pitch. I do have the same concerns around the transfer fee. The only name that I was thinking that sort of meets the qualifications that Carl was talking about in terms of who's out there that's actually gone now and won a championship and has performed under pressure and in a way has performed where, you know, teams have been suffering with a supposed jinx, is Sequeira at Benfica, who we were linked with previously. And there's talk that the Benfica haven't made a good enough offer to sign Sequeira on a permanent deal. And it was interesting that I saw that link. I think that story broke in Ebola, the Portuguese newspaper, and it was retweeted, etc., last night when it was floating around. And you just wonder if the rumours then of Moreno potentially going to Real Madrid, because he has, Carl, am I right in thinking, he was quoted at one stage that Moreno said that he'd prefer to wait for Real Madrid if there was talk of them actually coming in from.
I don't think it was him himself. He's said all along that he, you know, until the World Cup squad was sorted, he wasn't saying anything about his future one way or the other. That's all he was concentrating on. But yeah, of course, like with Suarez's lawyer and everybody else who wants a bit of money at this time of year, yeah, there's been talk from his solicitors and his agents and everything about the bigger money, the bigger clubs.
And so look, in reality, to me, there's only two potential options that are different to Moreno in terms of experience-wise, etc., that's there, that we know that are available and that we're potentially interested in. The only other name that's been thrown in the ring that would fit the profile, etc., would have been Ricardo Rodriguez at Wolfsburg. But I think you're talking the same money if you had been going in for him at the same time. So to me, it's one or the other. And we've gone for Moreno. They seem to put all the eggs in the basket. If that's the fullback, the type, it's the attacking football fullback that we always put with a Brendan Rodgers side, then look, I'm all for it. It says to me that we have money to spend, which is great.
You seem to be talking yourself into a duo of Flannel on his more natural right side and the new kid Moreno and squeezing out Perel Glenjo. That's what you basically
look at. One can always dream.
Yeah. Speaking of dreaming, Steve Brown, and welcome to the bunker, brother. Shaqiri.
Yeah.
Talk to me about Shaqiri. It's
my opinion. I know Phil agrees with me. We should be going for Shaqiri ahead of Lallana all day long. The prices that are rumoured to be quoted, and I was looking at Twitter there on the way up, and Southampton now want 30 million for Lallana. Like, we should literally just walk away from that. There shouldn't even be another negotiation. 30 million quid for Lallana is ridiculous. For that money you'd be looking at someone like Fabregas, not Lallana. But going back to Shaqiri can play both sides, plays number 10, he does it all. And he's been unlucky at Bayern Munich. Like, when he left Bale, there was a lot of talk about where he should go, and I think it was always kind of his dream to go and play with Bayern at that stage, and it just hasn't worked out, purely because they've Ribery and Robin playing either side of a number 9. But Shaqiri could fit into our team in a number of positions. Like, he's genuine. We'll see in the World Cup. Like, I believe he's going to be one of the stars of the World Cup. I think Switzerland have an excellent side, and he's the main man for Switzerland. I look for a quote on him. If they're looking for 15 million, which is half what Southampton are looking for Lallana, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, James, it's fair enough point that Steve makes there, is that, like, not getting in on a regular basis to the Bayern Munich team, which just kind of reminds me of the AC Milan of around 1990 era, where they just bought all the players. It's not exactly much. Buy all the players. It's not exactly a criticism. So would he be a guy that you'd be excited to see coming towards Anfield?
Is that Shaqiri?
Yes, right.
Yeah, I mean, funnily enough, I saw him more at Basel, to be honest. But when you saw him at Basel in the Champions League games, he's very, very impressive. You know, very quick feet, very fast. You know, basically, and it's such a simplistic thing to say, but a player who, you know, clearly had the capacity to make things happen. And funnily enough, before I came on, I was just reading a thing on that Stats Bomb website comparing Lallana and Shaqiri, and it's kind of apples and oranges, really, because I think Lallana's kind of a midfielder. You know, Shaqiri's sort of a, you know, kind of a wide forward. He's more of an attacker. But Shaqiri's sort of numbers for a player of 22 are, you know, very, very impressive. You know, he's very good at more or less everything in attacking terms. And I think the thing with a player of about that age, and I think, you know, Can or Jano, however you pronounce it, would be another if we got him, and Moreno would be another. They may be big fees to pay, particularly, well, certainly in the case of Moreno, which looks like it may even be the next one that happens. But you're buying players at the age of between 20 and 22. It's a very good age to buy. I mean, we saw this with Henderson. If you find a good one, it's great, because, you know, if the club's, you know, if the player proves to be very good and the club is actually successful enough otherwise to actually for the player to be happy to stay where they are, you know, you might have them for 10 seasons. And if they're not that, you know, if they're not that great, they've still got a certain amount of resale value. You know, you make a loss, but, you know, another club might think, well, look, didn't work out from there, but they proved before they got there that they were decent. You're buying a player at 20 to 22, 23. They've already shown that they can come through probably possibly the most difficult thing where some players fall by the wayside, which is making the step up from kind of youth level and sort of development level football to senior football. And they've already shown some of what they can do. And what they've shown is what they might be able to do in the future. You're buying them sometimes for big fees, but you're buying them at an age where the resale value's pretty good, whatever happens. And but there's the excitement of what they might go on to do and be capable of, particularly when we've obviously got a manager who's shown himself to be very good at improving the, you know, players.
Yeah, very, very fair. Another point that Steve made there, Neil, is that the deal with Lallana, the reported deal with Lallana, and of course we're dealing in rumours at this stage, seems to have...
many rumours.
So many. And they're all so vague. But the numbers seem to be consistent enough that are being thrown out here. Would you be of the school of thought that says walk away from a 30 million deal for that kid?
No, I wouldn't.
You wouldn't?
Simply no. And I think we, as supporters and Liverpool supporters and followers, I think we're concerning ourselves a little bit too much with price tags.
Mm.
The targets have been identified by the club, and they know. I'm sure Liverpool are aware how possibly high the transfer fee could possibly go. I mean, if we want to compete at a high level on all fronts, not like we did last season just in the league, we want to compete everywhere, we're going to have to pay a premium for players, because firstly, throughout the footballing world, everybody knows we have the Champions League money and we have the increased TV money in England, so we're going to pay a premium for any player we want to sign. And we just need to identify our targets and go and get them. Because if you remember in the last transfer window there, around Christmas time, people were saying, why don't we just pay the money and go and get them, for Conor Pianca deal, for example. Just pay the money and go and get them. But this time people are more apprehensive, saying, hold on to the money and don't be spending so much. I think we get caught up in all that too much. Identify your targets and go and pay whatever he costs. If Rodgers and the committee... I'll do the inverted commas thing with your fingers there.
Yeah, good, if that works well.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah,
brilliant. That's how we're rolling. No, the point I'm making is if they see he's what we need and that's how much he's going to cost, just go and get him and don't get caught up so much in transfer fees. Because
but does this stems though from 11, doesn't it? This stems from Andy Carroll, Stuart Downing.
You're badly damaged by that, aren't you?
I cannot find a Liverpool fan who's not badly damaged by particularly Stuart Downing.
What about the point? What about the point that Neil's making there about it's not
general,
our money?
No, the general point is fine, right?
Yeah.
And I completely agree. If we identify a transfer target and that's who we want.
Mm-hmm.
And we go all in, then we have to be prepared to go. But there has to be a cap at some point that, and you'd imagine, and look, we discussed the committee last week, but you know, you're talking about lads who are paid to make these decisions, right? And I don't for one second believe that they will go in and say, right, we're going, it's not like they're bidding for a house and they're getting carried away with the auction here, you know what I mean?
Mm.
There's talk that's been floating around that, you know, a lot of this is shadow boxing, effectively, that the Southampton board want to look like that they've getting a good deal out of this and they're pushing it. And if you remember, go back to about 3 or 4 weeks before the season ended, and there was talk that a £25 million deal had already been agreed. Now, for all intents and purposes, it looks like we're going to end up at a £25 million figure if we're going to sign Lallana, right?
Mm.
But there's all that other stuff that's going on with Southampton in terms of losing the manager. They've already sold Ricky Lambert. They need to look like that they've got the best deal possible for Southampton out of this. Mm. For the fans' sake, if you know, you know, to save some face, because if there appears to be a bit of a fire sale that's happening at Southampton this summer with Pochettino.
Hence the statement today where they're saying, yeah, we have a preference not to do deals till the new manager's in place, but if it's right for the club.
Exactly.
Which is just...
Exactly.
You know.
And I think, now, that's aside to, well, how does Shaqiri play, how does Shaqiri in terms of value terms rate to Lallana?
Mm.
You know, you can have these discussions separately. They aren't tied up in one. You're allowed to think that Lallana is a good player, but you don't necessarily think he's a £25 million player. You know, that's where the reservation will stem from. If we were talking, you know, the difference between 15 and a £17 million bid and Southampton wanted 17 or 18 million, I don't think I'd have an issue in terms of that. I just feel at 25 million, it's a bit back to what we talked about the Moreno thing, right? I just think that at 25 million, you should be buying something close to a superstar.
Yeah.
You know, in world football.
Suarez for 22 and a half million. I know Suarez was a bargain at the time.
Yeah, but there was also baggage with Suarez.
There was baggage. A big baggage, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. I think that's where the apprehension comes from. We're a bit damaged with the Carroll and the Downing thing, right? But look up the M62 to Manchester, right? And look at when they signed Varane, who was a flop for them, right? And it looked like he was a world-class player coming into that side.
He was at the time.
They spunked acres of money on Nani and Anderson when they signed them as well, right? You'd hardly say now, you know, out of them, Nani's been good at best in his things, but they didn't sign world class players.
Nonetheless, Phil, all those players that they did sign for those inflated prizes, they did win the league more often than not. Yeah, with the
I know, and, but that's my general point, Neil. When when you get to a stage where you want to challenge for you're fishing in a bigger barrel at this stage, and you're also fishing with heavier line and a bigger rod. Really, you know what I mean?
That's a fucking wonderful metaphor. I'm going to finish on that. That is fucking beautiful. I'm so happy with that. Okay, let's move on. Talk a little bit about the World Cup, yes, which is basically what's going to be driving us through the next few weeks while we're waiting for our pre-season to start. Carl, Brazil, home of football, 5 times World Cup winners. This tournament's probably likely to go right off for a number of reasons, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, well, ever since it was announced that Brazil were going to hold it this time, I think everyone's been waiting for it and looking forward to it. Certainly every single player that you hear do an interview says, oh, you know, playing in Brazil of all places, this is the one we want to take part in.
Yeah.
So with that and the football, and then you've got the backdrop of obviously a bit of social unrest around the place as well. It's just this, you can't miss any of it. I mean, really, the football, everything that goes around it, the stadiums, the nonsense of FIFA, the whole lot of it combined is going to be amazing.
Yeah, and even the downside, as it seems at the moment, compared to the potential absolute clusterfucks that are ahead of us in the next 2 World Cups, the way they've lined them up at the moment, people are going to absolutely savour this, aren't they? It being in a proper football nation and full, for the most part, of people who really want to see the teams play. Neil, would you have any concept what you think is going to be Liverpool's star man at this tournament?
I suppose the obvious answer for everybody is Suarez, isn't it?
Yeah.
Obviously. Well, that, if he's fit. We don't know whether he's going to be fit or not. Now, all the noises coming from Uruguay, I mean, he's going to be fit, but I suppose
they
that
would
remains
be,
to be seen. I suppose, looking at it a little bit closer to home, if the potential, well, after Sturridge's goal the other night against Peru, he has all the potential in the world. If England go a long way in the tournament, he's possibly going to be their star man, because he's going to score the majority of the goals they score, because Rooney doesn't seem to be in form at the minute. And I suppose allied to that as well is just thinking of the Liverpool connection, you have Sterling. I know he didn't start the other night, but when he came on, he made enough of a difference to suggest he should start.
Yeah.
So from the Liverpool end of things, depending on who they sign before the World Cup as well, it has to be, we have to wait.
This is a very good point.
But I suppose initially Suarez and Sturridge potentially.
Very nice. James, for you, who would be the guys to look out for from a Liverpool perspective who might shine at this World Cup?
Yeah, I mean, Suarez is very obvious. So in terms of someone who can kind of really announce themselves, it is hard to look past Sterling and Sturridge. Because, you know, Sturridge is kind of, you know, Sturridge is in a Subway advert now, and he's kind of...
well, he's made it, so...
What I'm saying is, he's starting to get the recognition. I mean, yeah, recognition is measured in you know, in adverts for you know, for takeaways.
Yeah,
chicken teriyaki Subway as well.
Sturridge, he's starting to kind of be recognised as kind of the main man now. He's England's number 9, isn't he?
Yeah.
And it comes at a time where Rooney's been looked at going into a tournament with a sort of a sense of, well, if Rooney doesn't do it at this international tournament, he'll never have done it at once since he was 18, and, you know... People are even asking, is it worth building the team around Rooney? Because you kind of have to do that if you're going to play both Rooney and Sturridge. You have to kind of build it around Rooney. Is it worth doing that when the guy's not performed at a tournament? Okay, injuries, but a lot of the time, the reason he's not been fit for the tournaments is because he's not the, you know, the greatest athlete or the greatest professional when it comes to getting over those injuries. So you wonder. But I mean, Sturridge, yeah, for that reason, he's just starting to get that bit of recognition domestically as kind of England's, you know, main man in terms of goals, and he's scored 21 goals in the Premier League and all that kind of thing. But obviously, he's not played European football for Liverpool. He's only recently come into the fray really regularly for England. So certainly Sturridge, Sterling. Has obviously impressed anybody you want to watch the Premier League, but in a wider sense, again, he's pretty new. I would say those two ahead of Henderson just by virtue of the fact they're attackers. You know, attackers score goals, attackers, you know, set goals up. They get the attention.
Yeah.
You know, Henderson could well impress people there, but I mean, yeah, it's hard to look past those two, because I think most of our players at the World Cup are the England players and Suarez, aren't they? You know, there's not too many others that have gone either, because they've been left out of, you know, the Brazil squad, Lucas and Coutinho, or play for countries that haven't got there. I mean, Sacco's another one, but yeah, again, same thing, you know, attackers tend to get attention, don't they?
That's a very good point. Steve Brown, I could see you kind of leaning in when Sacco was mentioned. Yeah. Is that a guy you think might show well?
I'm intrigued to see how Sacco gets on. I don't think we've seen anywhere near the best of Sacco in a Liverpool jersey this season. Obviously, the season was interrupted a lot with injuries and form and so on. So I think it'd be very interesting to see who, or how, sorry, how he gets on playing with France. He's the main man at the centre of France defence, apparently. Hmm. So, be interested to see how, if he can make that step up next season into a Liverpool jersey as being the main man, because I think last season it was always Skrtel was the number one, it was someone partnering Skrtel. So I'd like to see, hopefully, Sacco is the number one choice next season, and someone coming in to partner Sacco rather than Skrtel. So be I'm intrigued to see how he'll get on.
And he was pretty central, in fairness, to them getting there in the first place.
He scored the two goals against Ukraine in the playoff, but they were, was it 2-0 down? 1-0? 1 or 2-0 down after the first leg, and he scored twice in Paris. So he will be integral to any hope that France have, but France could just blow up after the first game. Like, just
very true.
Don't know.
Very true.
He's been their captain as well in the warm-up games.
They seem to see a little bit more perhaps in him than is being seen and being recognised just yet at Liverpool, I think, Carl. Is there anyone that stands out for you apart from the obvious names that we've mentioned?
No, I think it's going to be Raheem Sterling, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think he can probably going to have some sort of tournament along the lines that Michael Owen did back when he first made the grade. I think he'll start off as sub, he'll have a big impact off the bench, he'll earn himself a starting spot, and he'll go on to be the main man. Whether that means England actually do anything or not remains to be seen, but if they do, it's, you know, on account of us having all the players, then there's a good chance that someone from Liverpool will do well.
Liverpool are going to win the World Cup.
Liverpool,
on Sterling. Yeah. The one thing that Sterling has going into this is that he did play in the under-17 World Cup in Mexico a couple of years back. So he's used to, he'd be more, like, he's played in this type of temperature zone in tournament football, and he set that tournament alight as well. He was England's top player in that actual tournament. So for me, like, he's already got the grounding and the training to come in and take the world stage in this type of tournament format. Sacco, I think, like, again, Sacco plays the way he naturally plays when he was at PSG, in terms of he's aggressive in his attack, and funnily enough, I think France are potential dark horses because they've a decent enough defence, they've got a strong midfield, and if Benzema is on fire, he can score goals. The problem you have is that they've suffered with infighting, as we know, through the things, and I don't know, it's looking at it, you know, there's plenty of potential stars in the England team who are Liverpool players. Gerrard going into his final tournament could set the world afire in the same way Pirlo did in the European Championships. You know, this is his last chance in a real sense to do something here and make his mark as England captain going into this.
Well, look, you've already sort of half done a sneaky segue into the next bit, so let's leave Hodgie's Ingerpool to one side there and let's move on to
Ingerpoolton.
Who you think might be
South Ingerpool.
You've mentioned France there as a potential dark horse. Mm-hmm. Outside of the obvious ones, I think everyone's predicting Brazil, Argentina, Germany, Spain for the last four. Who do you see?
If you go on the likelihood of how many European teams have managed to win a World Cup outside of Europe?
Yeah,
right. The whole thing is that it's against a European team winning this actual tournament. Just the history and the stats and all back it up. So then you're looking at, okay, who's likely to win it out of South America if it's not Argentina or Brazil? And arguably Colombia are the best positioned team of all the South American teams outside the big two. They've got a reasonably good defence. They've got Juan Fernando Quintero, the kid who's expected to set the world alight. They've also got James Rodriguez, who hasn't had a great season at Monaco this year, but he had played incredibly well for Porto beforehand and done well. Their one issue is that Falcao, I think, is now out of the squad. There was talk of this even. I didn't see the finals.
Hasn't been announced.
I think he's missing out because of the ACL. However, in Jackson Martinez in reserve, they have another player who can score a lot of goals.
Anyone think you've been writing about these guys lately?
I haven't.
I have.
No.
That's good. I'm fucking well impressed with that.
They have the firepower. I think every team in this tournament, bar Italy, are questionable defensively. So it's going to boil down to, you know, can a European team overcome the odds and actually go on to lift the trophy? Outside of that, it's down to those three, in my opinion.
Okay, Steve, you're a man who loves the World Cup as well. Tell me things about dark horses and potentials.
Colombia are my dark horse. I've been looking at it for a couple of weeks now. It all depends. Like, it actually doesn't depend as much on Falcao. People seem to think if Falcao doesn't play...
We just did this.
Yeah, I know, because I read my piece and fucking went around it.
Read your piece.
You're looking at his piece?
I'm looking at his piece again.
Yeah, can we put our pieces away, please? Thanks. Anyway, go ahead.
No, it's... I can't see it being a World Cup of many dark horses, many shocks. I think it's going to pretty much go to form.
Yeah.
As I said, quarterfinals, maybe you'll get one or two, but up to the semi-finals, it's going to be, I think, it's going to be Brazil, Argentina, Germany. So, I can see Spain getting knocked out early.
So you can't see past the obvious, the big shots.
Not to win.
Okay, fair enough. James, your own shed for who you think might be outsiders or possible likely candidates to upset?
I think Steve said it well, really. It doesn't really look like much of a tournament for the dark horse, because I think anyone in Europe who's not considered, you know, sort of strong enough to be going there as one of the favourites anyway is probably going to have that kind of, that slight disadvantage of playing on, you know, playing in South America, and depending on where the fixtures fall, altitude, you know, heat and all that kind of thing. But I think the other factor is that I think two of the teams that a lot of people would look at as well, they've got really good squads on paper, are Colombia and Belgium. Well, neither of them have been to a World Cup in a long time. I think, I don't know if I'm right in saying, I think Belgium were at 2002, weren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Colombia haven't been there since 98. So you've got generations of players who've not been to World Cups. And I just wonder whether that kind of might make it a bit more difficult for them to actually really put something together. Then again, you know, that might have been said about Turkey in 2002 and they got to the semi-finals then, you know, and so did South Korea. But then that was just a very, very weird tournament anyway.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think Argentina look a good bet, because I think, you know, a lot of pressure on Brazil, whether the adverse atmosphere with some of the political stuff might not be the best thing for them. I'm not sure. Probably won't filter into the stadium. But Tim Vickery, who's, you know, would have his finger on the pulse with South American football, always gives the impression that they will be quite a fickle crowd. And this isn't, you know, on paper the most outstandingly talented Brazil team. It's probably be a bit of a crushing machine, really.
Yeah.
And I think they could, depending. I mean, to be honest, if you're Brazil, you might be hoping for the fact that Spain struggle in their group, because you could end up, you know, struggle to the extent that they end up in a shock knockout, because that would be a difficult opponent to play. Then again, they battered Spain in the Confederations Cup, didn't they? So Argentina, I think, would be one, because Messi had a big mid-season break. There's not the kind of the Tevez-Messi dynamic there. Those two not really working that well together. They've got a very good team on paper, if not as good defensively at the other end. You just wonder, and I think that their potential run is a bit more favourable. You wonder whether it's a turn, you know, Messi's never really done it for Argentina the same as he has for Barcelona.
Yeah,
You wonder whether it might be the time, but dark horses, it's hard to see, I think.
Yeah, I'd have to roll in behind you there. I think I'd have a strong fancy for Argentina myself. Carl, finish us out with your thoughts about who you think might be possible dark horses, and then if you might move on to who you think might be some surprise players of the tournament outside of Liverpool connections altogether.
All right, well, I mean, dark horses, we've well covered that. I think Colombia are probably the only, not one of the first four favourites, who have reasonably got a good chance.
Yeah.
I don't think you know, people like Holland are even going to get past their group, to be honest. I think Chile will probably get through there ahead of them. Spain, I don't think Spain will go out maybe as early as was saying here, but I do think Germany might do that. I can see Germany not doing as well as everybody thinks they're going to do at all, to be honest.
Right.
Interesting. The fixtures are very bad for Germany, aren't they? I think the fixtures, they're playing in difficult climates, I think, a lot, aren't they?
Yeah. They're struggling with the squad as well, aren't they, Carl? Like, if you look at Khedira, who you'd imagine would have started...
He made the squad,
yeah. But like he's not back in form
at all.
Yeah. So moving along then, Carl, who's going to be possible, you know, Poborskis or Salif Jays of this tournament, fellas, they're going to make a breakthrough and get a big move and then possibly not be very good?
Well, I mean, you think that by now most teams know all the players who are going there, you know, maybe apart from a few, I don't know, from Algeria or whoever it might be, Iran. But there's definitely a lot of players around who, you know, normal fans might not have seen enough or to know who they're going to be, and then they get their transfer move afterwards. You look at people like Kolasinac, the left back from Bosnia-Herzegovina. I think Bosnia probably go through, actually, and it's the first World Cup, but I do really like their squad. It's very compact, and it's been pretty much the same people all the way through, and everybody's obviously very behind the nation at the moment. Switzerland obviously have got a good few. Fabian Schär there coming through. He's just about made himself a first choice at centre-back. Whether that changes when the World Cup starts is another matter.
Yeah.
And the same with Greece as well. Kostas Manolas is a really good centre-back. He's a young player, but just during the qualifiers, obviously Greece have got a fantastic defensive record anyway, all the time. But he came in and he really looked the part, to be honest.
Sorry to interrupt you, mate, but I'm wondering here because Phil's taking my Panini sticker album, so I can't actually do my research here live as we speak. But did Papadopoulos make the squad?
No.
He didn't. No. Okay, right.
Socrates will be the other starter, you'd think, but he also picked up a knock. I think he's been named in the squad anyway, but I may have to wait and see if he's fit to start.
Okay, cheers, Neil. Finish us out with this in terms of players you think might break through this tournament, or just at least be the star men.
Well, I think it seemed a little bit obvious to some, but Rice from Borussia Dortmund, I think has the potential to be one of the best players in the world. He might break through, similar to Ozil did in the last major championships.
Yeah.
The last World Cup. Although he is playing for one of the leading lights in Europe, I think if he does have the competition, I expect him to have it. There could be a bidding war towards the end of it, and the fee could go anywhere up, maybe as much, because he seems to have all the attributes, and maybe a little bit more than Gareth Bale has, in my opinion. So I can see his fee going sky high. So if Dortmund certainly aren't going to sell him before the competition, because he has the potential to be the best player there, my opinion.
So Marco Reus fee. Uh-huh. Okay, Steve?
Dependent on how France do with Paul Pogba.
Okay.
I think Pogba is... He's a young Yaya Toure. He's that good.
Yeah.
I've been watching for Juventus this season. The kid has everything. He has everything. He can pass, tackle, score goals from everywhere. He will, if France hold things together and don't kill each other, I think Pogba could be the star of the World Cup.
Okay, very interesting. What about yourself, Phil?
I know we've moved past the dark horses. I think Russia are going to do well in this tournament, right? And I think because of it, I think the likes of Zagoev is going to light up a thing. If you remember the last Euros, the Russians were they were very unfortunate in front of goal. They were making acres of chances, but they weren't taking any. They should have easily gone through and done more in the actual tournament itself. And I'm just looking at it now, saying, you know, they have a fair decent goalkeeper, good back four, decent midfield, and again the issues possibly is up front, whether Kershakov is going to score enough goals, or Kokorin is going to come in and light up the tournament. The group that they're in is eminently qualifiable. They're in with South Korea, Belgium and Algeria, and you'd imagine themselves and Belgium will come out of it, right? And generally it's a team that has the basics that's there. I think teams with strong defences in this World Cup are going to do very well, because there's so many teams who are going to open themselves up to quick transitional play, and it'll be just someone that's able to withstand a barrage and then break quickly and score. And that's why the likes of Belgium with Hazard and the other players that they're like Lukaku in terms of the power and the pace, and they've got one of the best goalkeepers in the world. You know, you look at the defenders and it's strong throughout. Similarly, Switzerland, I know Stephen touched on it as well. I'm looking at Granit Xhaka, I'm looking at they've got Berami there, they've Inler as well, they've a strong midfield. I think this could be the World Cup of midfielders as opposed to centre forwards. I go back to, remember the year that Cannavaro won the player of the tournament, and it was six, and it was like, you know, it was the first time I think a defender had won best player of the tournament. I think this could very well be a midfielder, because if you look at the way football has developed over the last 6-7 years, the all action midfielder has sort of made a comeback. When we look at Henderson in terms of how he plays for us, we've talked about Pogba there. He goes box to box, sitting alongside Pirlo when he's playing for Juventus. I'm looking at a midfielder more so than a centre forward or a number 10 who's potentially going to light it up. And for me, Pogba's a good shout. Vidal. Chile. If Chile get out of the group, I know everyone knows Vidal, you know, from Juventus, but he has the skill set to light up this World Cup as well. And it's those type of midfielders that I'm looking at that could potentially be the sort of the newly found superstars as such. And that's why, looking at, I suppose I've said Zagoev at Russia, but that was going more so for the traditional number 10 and playmaker who would do something there.
Excellent. Last part of our pod, as ever, is devoted to the mented world of listeners' questions. So let's get the ball rolling with a query from Paul Bowler. And Paul wonders, Carl, how would England winning the World Cup affect your life?
It's going to make me considerably poorer, because I've promised people that I'll fly back to England if England do get to the World Cup final.
Ah, right.
Work-wise, I'm hoping that I'd be able to pick up a bit more work than I got at the minute. And other than that, it would make me very, very drunk in the big party afterwards.
Well, that's very, very true. James, yourself, how would it affect you?
It would probably mean a lot more retweets for a kind of a rehash of the Hodgie Photoshop. Because obviously, the album I've got it on is called Heroes, so it'd be perfect. I mean, I should have got off my arse and got it on Billboard in advance of the tournament anyway, but I didn't. So
yeah.
Hopefully Hodgie's about for the next Euros so that I can just do it then and get my act together.
I love the way you're hanging out for that.
It'd be good fun, but I mean, wouldn't change my life.
Okay. On a related topic, Phil Casey, Darren Pritchard asks, and I've heard some stories about you, and this makes me wonder. If England win the World Cup and they erect a statue of the Hodge, how long will it be before that statue is destroyed? I'm speaking to a man who's possibly attempted some Hodge damage in the past.
Is the statue of Why the Redeemer not still standing on the White Cliffs of Dover, isn't it?
I hope that's gone. It's a serious question. Do you think
I'd love them to fly that statue out and stick it beside Christ the Redeemer and for the World Cup? That to me would make the World Cup. Jesus and Roy. Best of buds. Be wonderful. I don't know. I think in the same way that Carr would get a flight home to England, I'd personally get a flight over to England to take the statue down.
Just to do it.
Bring it home with me.
Yeah, I have to say I'd be motivated very similarly. Steve.
Would he get a statue?
Fucking Christ, they're all too right.
No, they'd put him in Buckingham Palace, surely, wouldn't they? And fuck the Queen out. Honestly, if they won the World Cup, of course they will.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. He'd get an eye on
who's next in line? Willie, is it? Willie, you're not getting in here. Hodgie's in there.
Hodgie's in.
When you can go and do the tour, you see him peeping out the curtains.
Oh, Jesus. Steve Brown, Dave Thomas, a regular tripper.
Can we not
do
that even if he doesn't win the World Cup?
You just stick him on the top of it on the flagpole.
Let's just do that anyway.
It'd be wonderful, wouldn't it?
Hodgie in Buckhouse.
Yeah. It'd be the right statement for it. A tabloid, no, not a tabloid, a broadsheet king
yeah. In the tabloid world. Yeah. Neil, there's a question in from Flats here, and Flats says, you're on a desert island. We always have a desert island question. And you're with Jose Mourinho and Rio Ferdinand. Who do you kill and eat first?
It's an interesting question, I suppose, isn't it? Well, I suppose, right, if you're really to...
Well, Ferdinand probably tastes a bit like duck.
Think about it deeply. I wouldn't eat Ferdinand first because, you know the way cows have to be checked for angel dust and possible drugs putting into the cows for growth enhancement.
Yeah, yeah.
So you couldn't eat Rio because he is potentially have taken some of them because he was very close to a drug scandal there not so long ago.
Right.
So I definitely wouldn't eat Rio because he probably... Yeah, no, just wouldn't eat him anyway. Save him. Yeah. And I would eat Mourinho and the reason I would eat him was because he looks a little bit like a dry-aged steak.
Right. Right.
You know what I mean?
I see where you're going.
Kind of darker on the outside but kind of and red on the inside.
Yeah,
I'd say he'd be nice.
Really? Right, you see, actually, quite
honestly,
looking forward to that.
Yeah,
that's interesting. That's good.
Good chance that Mourinho will eat himself before you get a chance to.
Oh, he is. Yeah, he does on a regular basis. Neil, Carl Trotman's wondering, who did you pretend to be as a kid, football or otherwise?
Jackie Jackanowski.
What?
He used to play up front for Celtic.
Oh, yeah.
A long, long time ago.
That was your go to guy.
I don't know why, I just did.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because I had a Celtic jersey with his name on the back of it.
Oh yeah, fair enough.
That was all I had as well. I had to wear that every day, so I couldn't pretend to be anyone else.
fucking hell.
Him and Ian Beale.
Carl, if they were real... Oh, sorry, actually, a different one here. This is from Proper Pren on Twitter, and she wonders, if you could run someone's Twitter account for a day, who would it be?
Right, well, I'm going to mess with the whole of Liverpool sides of Twitter. I'm going to take over Dave Hendricks' Twitter profile and I'm going to agree with everything everybody says.
Oh, I really, really hope Dave isn't listening to this. He's going to love that one. That's quality, mate.
I love Dave. He knows that.
It's just brilliant.
I know.
Finally, some admin, then a big shout out to Astro Park, as ever, for hosting us all year here. If you want to play 5 or 7-a-side football, get onto them and book your game. Thanks, as ever, to Johnny Rep. They may be getting World Cup rest, but they will be back. Keep your eyes on the site, as each of us will be doing a preview of the World Cup groups in our own style, including someone who completed his piece, then berated everyone else for their tardiness, and managed to get one of his own four teams wrong. So a little self-editing may be required there by Phil Scissors Hands. We also have a couple of new writers coming on board, so expect some good content as ever over the next few days. Your day trippers tonight were Carl Matchett, Neil Gray, Stephen Brown, James Owens, Phil Casey, and myself, Trev Downey.